Hello everybody and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You'll be tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe. This show airs every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. Now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe, Lisa, Dee, and Betty Ann.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Chit Chat Cafe Live. We're airing live from Artist First World Radio. We have a really exciting show tonight, don't we, girls?
We do.
Yes. We have our first guest is going to be Angela Cartwright. If you remember her from Lost in Space and The Sound of Music, which happens to be one of my favorite movies ever. I watch it several times a year. How many times have you girls watched The Sound of Music?
It's every year.
We definitely watch it every... Well, we're decorating our Christmas tree. That's a definite. We always do that. But then I watch it a couple other times, snuck in there.
Yep, we watch it every year here. It's been just such a legacy with our family that I'm so excited for this evening.
Well, yes, Betty Ann, you want to do the honors?
Well, yes, I do. I have to say that tonight we are honored to have a guest who is a well-known and loved actress, author, singer, model, photographer, and artist. She's known by many as Brigitte Von Trapp in The Sound of Music. I'd like to welcome the most fabulous Angela Cartwright. Hi, Angela.
Hello. How are you tonight?
Great. Oh, my God. We are so excited to have you on. I mean, this is just such a thrill and an honor. I can't even say. We love you. We love you.
Thank you. It's always great to hear.
And we're all starstruck. So, like, if we start stuttering, you'll know why.
Well, now's the time to ask all those burning questions.
Yes,
I
know.
That you've had over the years.
Well, I remember watching you on so many shows. I mean, from the Danny Thomas Show to The Sound of Music to Lost in Space, so many shows. You've done so much in your life that I can't even believe all the credits that you have. But how old were you when you first started acting?
Well, I was actually 3 years old when I did my first movie. And that was Somebody Up There Likes Me with Paul Newman. And he played my father.
Oh my God.
I hit it out of the ballpark, first job ever.
I mean, I'm fainting. Wait a minute. It's hot in here, and I'm fainting. Okay.
The only drag was I was 3 years old. I mean, it's not like, you know, I could appreciate who was playing my father.
Yeah.
But I did see him years later when I was a teenager and asked him if he remembered me. And he was like, kind of like, whoa, I can't believe it. You know, that moment when you, like, feel really old, I think that's how he felt.
Oh, because you had grown up, and he was
he was like a baby, too. It was like his first movie. It was the Rocky Graziano story, a fighter. He played a fighter with Pierre Angeli. And, I have a couple of scenes in it, and I had a couple of lines. And a really interesting thing is that the director of that movie was Robert Wise. And he cast me in Sound of Music many years later, because I was 10 or 11 when I did Sound of Music, and he didn't even realize that he was recasting me. And they had given me this little mouse when I did Somebody Up There Likes Me, and after we started Sound of Music, I took it to the set and asked him if he'd sign it for me. And it was like, whoa. But it was like a flashback, you know? So that was kind of interesting that he recast me years later.
Wow, that is a cool story. I mean, that's just amazing. But there's so many amazing things that you've done. I mean, I was looking through, you know, all of, you know, your bio and all of your credits and everything you've done. And I mean, you know, working with Danny Thomas when you were Linda Williams. Like, what was that like? Like, Danny Thomas, like, that's like, unbelievable. That's just amazing. Like, what was that like to work on that show?
Well,
was it fun?
It was an experience every night. that we did. We actually rehearsed it for 4 days, and then on the fifth day we did it live in front of an audience. It mm-hmm. was when you did live television, you only had one chance and three cameras. Danny was the complete opposite of my parents. So I had a blast. I mean, he was loud, he was, you know, gregarious, he yelled, mm-hmm. he was terrific. I loved working with him. He was very creative, and you never knew what was going to come out of his mouth. Of course, a lot of things went over my head because I started that show when I was 4, and it went for 7 years.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
But as I got
That's
older, he really was a very funny man and a very smart and creative person. So I loved it. I didn't know any different. I mean, that was my childhood.
Yeah, I guess that's true because that's what you did. You grew up doing that, and you did a lot during your childhood. Did Marlo, his daughter, ever visit the set when you were filming?
She did visit the set. I was actually closer with his other daughter, Terry, than I was with Marlo, okay. because Marlo was quite a bit older than I was. But she did come on the set several times. And, you know, I used to play Barbies with Terry. You know, uh-huh. and he also had a son, Tony, who is an extremely successful producer today. He mm-hmm. does produce a lot of shows. But Terry and I just really hit it off. She was great, and we used to play Barbie dolls.
that's a great story. I love that.
You know, I was still a kid. I might have been in show business, but, you know, I
yeah.
did sit around coloring in my coloring book with my mom.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was in an adult world, but I still, you know, love to play with dolls. And I don't know. It's strange when I think about it and I hear myself talk about it. It's mm-hmm. such an unusual childhood, but it was mine. It was the way it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly, you know, brought a lot of enjoyment to everyone in all the shows that you, you know, were in. Now, one thing I didn't remember, but I was like, oh, my God, you worked with Alfred Hitchcock. What was that like?
You know, I did an Alfred Hitchcock Presents,
mm-hmm.
and I walked in carrying a bowl with tadpoles in it. What I can remember the most of that, it was, you know, a fun experience. I don't remember anything terribly dramatic about it. It was actually my sister that did the birds for Alfred Hitchcock, where
oh.
she worked with him for, you know, many months while they made mm-hmm. that famous movie. So she's probably one that would know more about Alfred Hitchcock. She liked him. A lot of other actors thought he was grumpy, but she actually, I think he enjoyed her company.
She liked him?
Yeah, well, we were born in England, my sister and I, my whole family,
mm-hmm.
except my brother. And, you know, Alfred Hitchcock was English, so I think Veronica and he used to have tea together.
Oh, how about that? I mean, I would think that he was scary because his shows were scary.
Well, you know, yeah, kind of like where is all this coming from kind of personality.
Yeah.
I think Bill Mumy, my friend Bill Mumy from Lost in Space,
mm-hmm.
He didn't have as pleasant an experience. I think Alfred Hitchcock scared the Jesus out of him.
Uh-huh.
I think you would hear a whole different tale if you interviewed him. But I knew Veronica quite liked him, so maybe she just knew how to stay on his good side.
Oh, gosh, that's something. Well... Since and I love the Sound of Music too. I'm not gonna. I mean, I love it, and I sang every song all the time when I was growing up, and my family was sick of me. So, but I so. But Lisa wants to take this over when we get to the Sound of Music. So go on, Lisa.
I'm speechless. I just love that
okay, don't be speechless.
Do you remember
well, that's not good for radio, Lisa.
What was that? I know.
Did you have a question about
one of your lines? And that is the ugliest dress I've ever seen.
Yes.
You know, when you met Maria.
After doing the Danny Thomas show where I was supposed to be from Brooklyn, And I had a very English accent when I started that because, you know, we were all from England. And totally came here with no idea that the kids were going to get into show business. I mean, that was just totally, you know, some kind of master plan. But when I did Sound of Music, it was really fun to kind of get back that English accent again.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we were Austrian, go figure, it's the movies, nobody seemed to care, what the heck.
Do you remember that real vividly, filming that movie?
Oh, very vividly. It's probably the most ingrained in my mind because it was such a overall incredible experience. And it lasted for just about a year from beginning to end. You know, we did something that they don't do that much anymore now, and that is rehearse. And, you know, we rehearsed all the songs. We knew them inside and out. We knew all the dance numbers.
What was your favorite scene to film? Was it the one singing Raindrops on Roses in her bed?
That was the first thing we filmed, actually.
Uh-huh.
You know, I liked them all. They were all fun. I loved So Long Farewell because I loved the steps and kind mm-hmm. of being like we were, you know, mechanical clocks and stuff.
Right.
But I must say that Do Re Mi is the song that, when seeing it on the big screen, after having filmed it in pieces,
mm-hmm.
I thought, how amazing, because it really was like the first music video ever.
Mm-hmm.
It really was, when you mm-hmm. think about it. Because
that was actually filmed in the Alps, correct? It wasn't a soundstage, was it?
No. We had very little that we did on the soundstage. All the outside stuff was actually shot in Salzburg, Austria. And you can actually go to Salzburg and see all the locations.
I've been there. Don't they look exactly the same?
I mean, it just blows my mind how nothing has changed there. And we went all over Salzburg, and I know everybody in Salzburg at the time was going, what the heck is going on? Little did they know that for almost, I mean, in 2 years, it's 50 years for this movie.
That's just amazing. It seems like it's new. It just seems new still.
That is one of the qualities about this movie where it's timeless. It is a real Hollywood movie.
Now, what was it like to work with Julie Andrews and Christopher Plummer?
Well, we all loved Julie Andrews. Pardon?
What was it like to work with Christopher Plummer and Julie Andrews? Did you stay in touch with them over the years? Or?
Well, we have, actually. We had a reunion on Oprah, and that was really fun. We've seen Julie over the years several times, mm-hmm. and she is just as warm and just as lovely as she always was. We adored her as kids and filming the movie, and she became like a big kid with us, and it shows. When you watch that movie, you mm-hmm. actually see the joy that we had with her. Chris Plummer, I never had a problem with Chris. He, I think, was, you know, a little grumpy and a little moody, but I think in another way it worked so well for his character. That there was this little kind of, I think the little ones were a little more fearful of him.
Mm-hmm.
I think not really knowing if this was for real or not.
Right.
Because he just, you know, he was the captain to them.
Sure. Now tell us about the Sound of Music scrapbook that you're doing now.
Well, this is a book that has been 10 years in the making. It actually came out of an idea that I had thinking about all the memorabilia that we all must have had from The Sound of Music, because
mm-hmm.
I love pictures, I love art, and my parents kept giving me, you know, cases and trunks and stuff with these scrapbooks and these albums. And so I called Heather, and I said, hey, do you have a lot of stuff from The Sound of Music? And she's like, yeah, remember we had our diary, and we were Beatle mad when we were making the movie, so we had all these secret languages and stuff, and she had all those and her diary. I said, you know, this would make such a great book if we all could put our stuff together. So it took us quite a while to get it all together, but we did, and we have come out with this book called The Sound of Music Family Scrapbook, and it's got replicas of our memorabilia. It has our stories that have all been weaved together by the writer Fred Bronson, and pictures people have never seen before, our private home movies that we shot in Austria, that our parents shot of us. It's just a trip down memory lane. And so we have this, and we have a website, somfamilyscrapbook.com, and we actually personally signed a whole section of these books to make available to people, but you can also get it at, you know, Amazon or any of those other places.
Wow. That's really cool.
But if you love the movie, it's just such a great gift, and there's so much information in it. All the things that people wanted to know, all the kind of behind-the-scenes things and questions we've been answered over the years, and we're really very, very happy with it. There's just a ton of info in it and pictures and stuff.
Well, that sounds amazing. Yeah, I would love to have that myself. I'll have to.
Well, you got a hint.
Yeah.
Mother's Day's passed. Let's see. What can we work on next? Is your birthday coming up? It's the perfect gift for people who love this movie. I'm telling you. I'm not doing a sales pitch here. I'm just telling you that people love this movie. They will love this book.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I love it right now. I have to get one. I'm going to have to get one now. I have to ask you, Angela, about Lost in Space.
Okay.
I have to. Well, first of all, I wanted to be Penny Robinson in the worst way. I love that show so much. And Dee, who's being very quiet right now because she's speechless. She wanted
to
be
talk. I can't even talk. And no, I wanted to be Penny Robinson.
She wanted to be Penny Robinson, too.
Will the real Penny Robinson please stand up?
It would be me. It would be me.
You know, the thing about Lost in Space, I can remember this so well. It so encapsulated an era where America was looking to outer space. It was, there was a magical kind of thing about, you know, being able to travel there. What if a whole family could travel to space? And I think that America was swept up in that. And it's so interesting. I did go to NASA about 10 years ago now, and the people that work there in NASA told us that that show, Lost in Space, had inspired them to go into the space program.
Wow.
That's amazing.
I mean, isn't that amazing? It captured people's imaginations.
I just loved that show.
I mean, it was, to this day, it was phenomenal. And I do have to tell you that, and please take this as a compliment, I was you for Halloween 1 year, and I won first place.
I have never been so complimented in my life. You
it
won
was a dream come true.
That's lovely. No, it's great. And to be that character and be associated with it, you know, I've got to tell you, it was a super popular show, and it has such a cult following to this day. After all these years, people
love
this show.
Well, with me portraying you, you did look a little bit more Italian. But I always,
Penny was international.
I wanted that hair. I wanted those eyes. I mean, every girl's dream, and to this day, you are still as stunning and gorgeous. So I am just, like I said, I am never speechless. I'm speechless.
No.
Thank you so very much. It's a dream come true for me. It really is. How many years later, but a dream come true.
Well, hopefully someday we'll be able to meet. That would be nice.
Oh, I would just pass out in front of you. That would be no way.
Oh, that would be good.
Well, Angela, are you in California, Angela?
I do live in California, in Los Angeles, yes.
Oh, okay, so we have to have a road trip.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
trip.
I'll go to
have
visit my son, and if I don't tell you girls where I am, I will be having, you know, lunch with Angela, so there you are.
Wow. That would be awesome. Well, if you know what, my website, there are places that I go, and sometimes I, you know, sign, or Facebook is probably the best. I have a Facebook page, And if you go to acartwrightstudio.com, that's my website, click on Facebook from there, and, you know, it'll take you to, you know, a place. I always put there what I'm doing, who I'm doing it with, whatever's going on, if I'm going to be back east. There's all sorts of stuff that comes up, so that's a good place to keep in touch, and I love people to come onto my Facebook. It's A Cartwright Studio, I think, AC Studio. It's not the one where I'm standing there in the spacesuit. That's some poser. I don't know who that is. So it's best to go from my my webpage.
Okay.
But come be my friends on Facebook. Come chit-chat on there with me.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Well, Angela, do you come out to the East Coast very often?
You know, it depends.
Occasionally?
Sometimes there are shows out there. Sometimes, you know, I'm invited back there. I've been back a couple times to the Von Trapp Lodge, which is up in Vermont, which is a fantastic place to go and get away from it all. They're open all year round. Lovely people. Those are the real Von Trapps, by the way.
We've had
a lot
of
Sound of
the
Music.
Show.
You might enjoy going there.
Elizabeth's been on our show.
You had them on your show?
Elizabeth Von Trapp has been on our show, yes.
Ah, yes. Yes. She's lovely. She sings, and she's a very nice person. So, yeah, there's, you know, sometimes...
That would be great. Now, I think David is on the line. David, are you on?
I am. I've been on. I haven't wanted to interrupt the chit-chat.
Oh, okay. Angela, I'd like to introduce you to David Daniel.
Hi, David.
Hi, Angela. I'm David Daniel. I'm here in L.A. with you, actually. I'm an entertainment producer with CNN, and it's been a joy to listen to the chit-chat going back and forth. And I was invited on to, I'm going to be talking about my own stuff a little later once we've wrung every possible story out of you. But I did want to get in and ask a few questions with your indulgence. First of all, as the ladies have said, it's an absolute pleasure to talk with you. The roles that you've played have all been incredibly memorable, and especially the three roles that you've talked about, Make Room for Daddy and The Sound of Music and Lost in Space, I've noticed they're all families, but not ordinary families. They're families that have had to adapt to very trying circumstances. Do you think that's part of what's made all of them so successful?
Well, I certainly think that might be a part of it. You know, it's kind of boring to tune into a show and no one's got any challenges or anything. So I think that people did so relate to the all-American family, and I think in Lost in Space's place, they were associating with the fact that it would be cool to be a family up in space. And I think that was a big draw. However, it became, you know, very campy. I think everybody loved Jonathan Harris. It was kind of funny and colorful and, you know, these goofy monsters and all of that. But I think that the gist of it all was this family union. And I know in Sound of Music, that's a big part of it. And I am told, you know, depending on your age and who I feel like you kind of resonated with, that's the character that you loved. You know, some love Kimmy because she was, you know, the littlest one. You know, some people like the Liesl, you know, because she had her first boyfriend. And that's the great thing about Sound of Music. It has so many roles, and that's why so many schools do this particular play, because there's so many parts in it.
It does. It really does. And the family, especially with The Sound of Music, as you said, you can absolutely tell how well all of you as kids got on with Julie Andrews. I mean, I'm thinking of the scene where your favorite things, I think, where you're all sweeping along that huge tilting lawn. And, you know, if it wasn't for the height, you really couldn't tell at a glance who was the governess and who were the children running along with her. You're all doing the same thing with the same amount of joy on your face.
Well, yeah, as I had said before, she was such a force of energy to kind of to be with. She was really terrific, she made us all laugh and enjoy and learn how to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious backwards, because she had just finished Mary Poppins. But she has that spirit about her, and I think that that really does show so much in the film. You can't help but smile, and the music is so uplifting and lovely.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was thinking that would be a reason to get people the Sound of Music scrapbook, because every summer, everywhere that I look, they do sing-along showings of
right.
the Sound of Music at outdoor theaters and amphitheaters. Oh, absolutely. You follow the bouncing ball, you know, the whole place, everyone's back on picnic blankets and in lawn chairs and singing along. It's you know.
How fun are those?
It's absolutely wonderful.
Because everybody knows the words.
That's it, exactly. You know, the culture now is so splintered. People, you know, with people looking at their own television programs or their own internet channels. But there are, you know, just some movies, especially the classics, that are such a part of the consciousness that are, you know, doesn't matter where you grew up or what generation you are, it's part of everyone's DNA here. And that really makes it a joy to watch again and to share and to pass along. You know, I've passed along. My daughter's 9, and she demands to watch it over and over. You know, it's because it's got that spirit to it.
It's
Sorry?
Such a great movie to have in your home that your kid wants to watch over and over again.
It really is. As you said, the spirit of it, the music is fantastic, the performances are great, and obviously, it shows the spirit that you had with the rest of the cast. You talked about you and Heather being Beatles fanatics. Didn't you, I heard something about you introducing Heather to the Beatles?
Yeah, she actually did not know too much about the Beatles. But I had an older sister, and they had just come to America. They were like sweeping England, and they were giving away albums, the very first album. And I can remember Veronica coming home and getting this in the mail and listening to it, and you know, my parents like going, what the heck is that? You know, my dad was a singer, he did love to sing, but this was certainly a sound no one had really ever heard before. So I was kind of a Beatle fanatic right from the very beginning, and totally swept Heather up in it, and the two of us were pretty inseparable during the movie. But you know, you'd have to kind of hand it to Robert Wise, because he made this family. He created this family. He could have chosen between any number of kids, and he actually, you know, chose us to be the Von Trapps. Well, we call ourselves the non-Trapps, but, you know, this was this family. And the remarkable thing about it, which we also touch on in this scrapbook, is that we are still a family. You know, we're a little dysfunctional. We're like all over the world. Mickey's in Australia, you know, Debbie's in Minnesota. It is this family. But when we come together, we have this common family essence about us. It's the most unusual and bizarre thing. Because I've done movies, and you don't always stay in touch with everybody that you've worked with.
And that really is a continuing testament to Robert Wise. Not only the performances and the common energy that was there for the film, but the fact that so many of you are so close, decades on from working together on that.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about the scrapbook and getting back together again with everybody for that. You've been an artist for almost as long as you've been an actress. And for, you know, for much of your life, that's really, especially recently, that's really come to the fore. What got you interested in art, especially in photography, when, you know, by the fact of the time you were a teenager, you're already well established as an actress?
I would have to say it just kind of runs in the family. My dad loved photography, but he was also a technical artist. And when I was younger, I loved art. I just loved drawing and painting and coloring. And there was kind of a period in time when it kind of faded from my life. And thank goodness it came back into my life again, because it is such a big part of my life now, and it makes me so happy. I really get kind of, you know, disoriented when I can't either sketch or draw or paint or something, or I'm doing just too much at the computer. I really find it balances me in life, and it brings me so much happiness. So I don't know. I think everybody has a bit of art in them. You know, so many people, you know, poo-poo it and say, oh, no, I can't draw, which I did for many years because my dad was a technical artist. Everything I drew never looked as perfect as what he drew, and so I was very hard on myself. And photography kind of took me out of that, and now I alter photography, paint it with oils, watercolors. I wrote a book about it called Mixed Emulsions, which...
I love that title, by the way, Mixed Emulsions.
Thank you.
That's just that's marvelous.
I had to fight for that title.
You're kidding me.
No, it should be altered photography is, you know, and things you can do. And I'm like, no, it can't be that because I'll never remember it. But they did tag it on there, altered art techniques for photographic imagery. They did put that after the mixed emulsions. But that's exactly what it is.
I can't see that fitting into a song somehow. If it work as a song title, I say it would work as a book title. But that's a bit long.
Well, that's exactly, though, I don't think you have to just take pictures and then be that way. They can, especially today with the iPhone, how fun are those? You know,
yes,
you can alter and just do all sorts of grunge and stuff to your photographs, and I love
absolutely. It. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, Instagram, this program that was snapped up for so much money so quickly, that's the basis of it. It allows people to, rather than, you know, just being stuck with the image that they capture in a photograph, being able to fairly easily give it any one of a number of different looks and change it and really, you know,
and share
create
it.
Something. Because that's what we're talking about with art, isn't it, is creation. And, you know, you don't feel right when you haven't created or been allowed to create in some form, whether it's drawing or photography or whatever.
Well, I think we all have it inside of us. It's just a matter of how we do it. It doesn't have to be with a paintbrush. It can be, you know, with cake batter. It can be so many different things. And you can't kind of put art in a box. It's just, it is what it is. And you just have to do what makes you feel good, you know, whether it's knitting or sewing or whatever. It's, there's just so many avenues. And I think that we need to have our kids be a part of that and not take it out of school and stuff. And
absolutely. You live here in California, obviously, you know, where, you know, parents are fighting to keep art in schools and music in schools and amidst all the budget crunches, they're fighting for that. So
it's not what they should be cutting out. It really isn't.
Absolutely.
No,
absolutely.
It's kind of upsetting, that whole thing.
Well, you've certainly set an example with all of the different avenues, as you said, that you've expressed yourself through the photography, through the technical arts, through acting, and, you know, you've certainly blazed a trail for a lot of people. I'm going to toss this back to the ladies because I've been dominating the talk.
It takes a lot to shut these three ladies up.
I don't know. They're where'd you guys go?
We're still here. We're just listening.
That was certainly interesting. Oh, good. I'm so glad you've been listening. Well, it was great talking to you.
Likewise.
Thank you.
I did want to mention one thing, Angela. I was looking through some of your art, and you have a line of rubber stamps called the Unruly Girls Club. That sounds so cool.
Those were from my sketches. Stampington and Company made those stamps, yes. The Unruly Girls Club. Because that's what I call myself, an unruly artist, because I don't draw within the lines. I feel there's a freedom about it, and that's part of what, you know, educating our kids to be able to be free and express themselves by art, either, you know, just writing a journal every night or something. In some way, if it can't be in school, it should be at home.
Yes, I agree.
You know, it's just so satisfying. And, you know, music is an art, too. So is dance. I mean, I look at those people on So You Think You Can Dance, and I'm like, oh, my God, who are those people?
Right.
They're like crazy dancers.
And they're kids. And they are kids, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah. They're children. I love that show because it so expresses the trials and the strength that you need to be in this business. It's you know, in show business, it's a lot of rejection. And if you can't have somebody telling you that you didn't get something, forget it. It's the wrong business for you. It is all about that. You know, there's, and it may not be because you don't have talent. It may just be because you have blonde hair instead of black hair.
Right. So, and I think sometimes that our younger generation, you know, not even now, but everybody has a tendency to take that personally. And it really isn't ever about that. It's, you know, the right fit for the right moment, for the right part. And,
absolutely.
And I have to tell you, you know what, Angela, you have been such an inspiration in all the venues that you have, you know, put yourself in front of, all the audiences. I don't know how we can begin to thank you. Thank you so much for being one of, you know, our honored guests on this show. We were all so looking. We were speaking about this all week long.
Oh, I'm so glad.
We were so giddy with excitement. We've been singing Raindrops and Roses and, you know, every song that you can imagine. How do I begin to thank you? I don't know, but I know from the three of us, thank you so much. We would love to come out in L.A. when we're out there. Hopefully, maybe we can get in touch. We'll have lunch with you. And thank you. Thank you for everything that you've brought to our show tonight.
Well, nice talking to you, ladies. And
thank you, Angela. We love you.
Okay.
We love you so much. Would you like us to break into a rendition of Doe a Deer?
Yes, please. And we'll fade out on that as I hang up. Don't take it personally when I hang up as you're singing.
Okay. No, we will not. Good night. And thank you.
Night,
thank
Angela.
You so much.
Thanks, Angela.
Bye-bye. Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much.
Thank you, David.
Okay. Thank you, Angela.
Bye-bye.
Lisa?
What a sweetie.
Wonderful. Yes. Absolutely wonderful. I think we're going to a quick commercial break. And then we're going to
be
right
back.
With Chit Chat Cafe.
Back to Chit Chat Cafe on the Artist First World Radio Network.
Well, hello everyone. We're back again, and we have our guest tonight is a nationally recognized pet expert and author who is also known as Miss Fido Manners. I'd like to welcome Charlotte Reed. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. I'm so happy
well,
to be with you ladies.
Oh, we're glad. We're so glad you're here with us. We have so many questions you can't imagine about our fuzzy families.
Well, Charlotte, first of all, how did you become a pet expert? How does that happen?
It's actually a really interesting story. I, like so many people, you know, went to school, had every intention of working in corporate America, and then I came home one sick Friday afternoon, and I found my dog walker dancing around in my apartment wearing my clothes.
Oh, no. Wearing your what? Your
wearing
clothes?
My clothes.
Clothes.
And when I look back on the story, I don't know if I was so angry because he looks better in the clothes than I did.
Oh, my God.
So that's kind of how it all came about. And then after, you know, after telling a few people what happened, I found, you know, this was kind of like, you know, almost 17 years ago. This was like really right before the whole pet explosion on the scene. And after telling a few people I knew about, you know, the things that had been going on, like my clothes had been disarray, and then ultimately coming into my apartment and finding him dressed in a bespoke outfit, I started hearing other stories. I started hearing stories about how you would hire, you know, a dog walker to come and stay in your apartment when you were away on vacation, and then ultimately you would come home early, or you would come home, and your dog walker you thought would be showering in the bathroom, and it turned out it was her boyfriend. So I decided that I didn't like my job, so I quit my job, and I really wanted to kind of create this kind of corporate you know, kind of new brand or new style of dog walking, where people were educated, where they were trained in first aid. So a lot of people consider me the grandmother of modern-day dog walking. I was really the first person in the country to service hotels and kind of, you know, do it the whole thing corporate style. So people used to joke because my dog walking business, which I still own after 17 years, I don't run it, someone runs it now. It's called Two Dogs and a Goat Incorporated, you know, Quality Pet Care Services. So people used to think, wow, that's like such a mouthful. But, you know, with the funky name and the incorporated, and really most of my clients early on, you know, came from veterinarians. It came from referrals. So that very quickly established me, especially here in a city like New York, where everyone is, you know, so status conscious, so service conscious. So, yeah, that was kind of like, you know, the introduction to the scene and a jumping off point for my career as it is now.
Wow. Well, can you tell us about some of the famous pets and pen owners that you've worked with?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Well, one of my all-time favorite clients is Mr. Barry Diller. For those of you who might have heard the name before, I mean, you know, at one point Mr. Diller was president of Paramount Pictures. You know, he owns a variety of websites like Hotels.com. You know, he has the big Vanity Fair party around Oscar time. He's married to Diane von Furstenberg. So he's one of the, you know, people that's known as Mr. Entertainment over the years. He's produced and done all sorts of things in the entertainment industry. So Mr. Diller was one of my clients. I've worked with Betty Buckley, the famous songstress, as you all know, Sunset Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had Kelly Klein as a client, and a variety of other celebrities who have dropped in town. People like Stan O'Neill, who at one time was president of American Express. So we've had, you know, here we've had clients, you know, from all types of music industry, authors. And, you know, we've had the discriminating waitress who wanted the best for her pet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Charlotte, I have a question for you. Now,
okay,
you've had such high, you've had such wonderful, wonderful clients. Have you ever had not so wonderful fuzzy family members?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've been
because we all do. We all do. We all have our families here.
Yeah, we definitely all have our families. And, you know, it's, but the one thing about dealing with family, in some way you can always communicate with them. You can, you know, human-to-human contact is one thing, but when you actually have a fuzzy family member that you're having problems with, that can be extremely frustrating for people. Because a lot of times you have to recognize, you know, the dog is fitting into your life. So even though you have certain expectations of having a dog, you have to understand how a dog thinks. So, you know, that's where problems come in. So I always tell people when they're getting a pet or when they want to adopt a pet, they really need to think about if they have the time, if they have the money, and if they have the wherewithal to deal with some of the problems. I mean, obviously, for example, one of the first problems people deal with, other than the process of getting the dog, of doing the research, which can go on and on and on, which is how to deal with the biggest problem usually comes up is housebreaking.
Mm-hmm.
How do I housebreak my dog? And I always tell people that, you know, you kind of have to decide what you want to do with your dog from the beginning. And what I mean by that is, do you want a dog that's going to the bathroom outside? Or do you want a dog that goes to the bathroom inside? Now, in the last, you know, I would say the last 15 years, we've had more and more people considering smaller dogs for a variety of reasons. One, we have a much more mobile lifestyle. We travel a lot, whether it's in our work or just in our social life. And sometimes people like to, you know, bring the dogs along. So thus, we have smaller dogs. Dogs are also living longer. So then we also are confronted with the issues of, you know, senior incontinence. And it's, you know, in this case, it's for the dog. So, you know, getting back to the puppyhood, what do you want to do with your dog? So generally, and if you do want to learn how to housebreak him, you really have to stick to a firm schedule to get him to go outside so that he understands going in the house is really not an option for him.
What?
And, you know, taking that into consideration, we also work longer hours. So if you don't have, like, children or a husband or maybe you can afford a housekeeper, or you want to have a dog walker, those are options that you definitely have to consider because one can't keep a dog confined,
right?
You know, for especially a puppy, for really long periods of time without
having water.
I think
people have to realize. Yeah, you're right. I think people have to realize, too, because, I mean, you know, I've always had dogs. They're definitely the family members. Right now I have two Lassapoos. I have Tallulah and Sebastian. They're twins. And they're, you know, going on 3 years old. And have taken in my son's French Beau because he moved to Los Angeles. And, you know, we didn't want this puppy, who's also two, to make the trip because we adopted him. He was abused.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, I don't think, you know, when people, I think they have to realize what a responsibility, like you said, it is to have this pet. Because they do become a family member. I know when we, you know, had Caden with us and being abused, that it took a good year almost for him to develop trust because he never had that.
Exactly.
And he is
and
the
that
most
takes patience.
Loving baby you'll ever want to meet now.
Right. And that's mm-hmm. also because you've provided him with, like, a loving, secure home where he can start of, you know, rebuild his life. It's like having a foster child. It's like they have to, you know, get comfortable, then they have to kind of scope out the situation. And sometimes that can take a while, and sometimes that can't. I mean, I have a dog who was rescued, and she didn't like men. And, you know, we're at a friend's house, and she was fostering her, and, you know, she said she was a breeder, and she was looking for a home for her. And my husband said, oh, she's adorable. I said, well, you know, there's a lot of problems. She doesn't like men. And it took really a good 6 months, almost 9 months for mm-hmm. her to feel really comfortable around my husband.
And that's how we were too, Charlotte, because Caden did not like women. And even though, you know, with my husband here, but between my daughter and I, he really had no other choice because we just decided we were going to love him to death. But we really brought him here thinking, like, we don't know what we're going to do because he does not like women. And he
exactly.
is now, like I said, I'm mommy, and he just, I mean, and he loves everybody. So
he's a baby.
He never had a chance to be a baby. So we gave
well,
him
he's
that
your baby
chance.
Now.
Yeah, we gave him that chance. We gave him, you know, all the love we could. And I love the fact that, you know, you started your business, even, you know, pioneering the dog walking to make sure that, you know, people's pets were taken care of, that their needs were being met. I mean, you've just pioneered so many wonderful things for, you know, pets and their owners. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, I always tell people that I'm my own worst client.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think about what I would like, what kind of person would I like to meet, what kind of person would I like to come into my house. And I think also the other thing was, where I had an advantage is I came from a background like a lot of my clients, or I had certain standards that I wanted to adhere to. So it was easy for me to understand their lifestyle. It was easy for me to understand someone who works 14 hours, who still wanted to have a loving pet into their life. So that kind of worked for me. And then, you know, from there my career blossomed out. I was very, very fortunate that, you know, I did write. So when I started doing television or I started doing radio, then I started writing. So, you know, I always look at it, I'm in a career where it's just kind of, the possibilities have been endless because in the last 17 years, I've seen an explosion in terms of the industry growing overall, the type of professions that have emerged from it. You know, now we have more experts and radio shows and TV shows
mm-hmm.
And writers and magazines than ever before. You know, who would think 20 years ago dogs would be going to black tie functions, walking on a red carpet, wearing a gown, a custom-made
right.
gown, you know, or people would be doing dog walk for charities. So it's been, you know, it's been a really exciting ride from starting out as, an ex-attorney. And, you know, I'm one for believing when you do own a business, especially when you have a staff, you know, one leads by example. So there's not one job that I've never not done, and my staff knows that. So, you know, I can pick up poop, clean up vomit, clean up diarrhea, just like anybody who's on my staff. And that's been helpful because over the years, I mean, dog walking is kind of a transient job, and it's helped me keep staff. And it has helped me people recognize that I'm not too good to do any job. And at the heart of it, I mean, that's what my business is about, caring for animals.
Betty Ann.
Well, Charlotte, we really enjoyed having you tonight,
telling us
about your pet business and about everything that has to do with pets. We have so many more questions to ask, but we have to get going now. I would like to have you back again on sometime because we're certainly not finished. I don't have any pets now. My dog passed away a couple months ago. Actually, it was more than a couple months ago. He passed away on 4th of July last year.
Oh, yeah. God, I can't believe it's been almost a year, Dante.
I know. It's been almost a year. And Lisa has two dogs.
Two rescues,
we would love to have you on again.
Sure. I want Charlotte to come to my house and have lunch. Nothing to do with my dogs. Just come to have a lunch with me.
Yes.
Okay.
That'd be nice.
Okay.
Charlotte, where are you located?
Some cheers. I've got to learn some cheers.
This is in New York.
I'm in New York.
We'll teach you cheers. Okay. Oh, we get in New York all the time.
Yeah.
We'll have to get together and hang out.
I would love that.
We would love that.
In SoHo. So anytime.
Oh, we love SoHo.
And you ladies are?
We are in New Jersey.
Okay.
We're scattered around New Jersey.
So we're not far from you.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
yeah,
a short
absolutely.
Little ride.
No.
I think it's a date. I think we have a lot more to talk about. And
we do.
Charlotte, we thank you so much for being on with us this evening. And we're definitely going to steal you away in New York for one afternoon, if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good
thank
night,
you,
ladies.
Charlotte.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you. Okay, we have David, who's been patiently waiting. He wants to give us some updates
on
all the really...
Can I just
okay,
go ahead. I have a friend that just popped up. He's listening in India. We have a listener in India tonight.
Fantastic.
I'm Ralph Picano. Hi. I just want to say hi to him because I know he's listening.
That's phenomenal. So phenomenal. Oh, we welcome him. David, are you there? Hey, there you are.
I am, and speaking of India, I can certainly recommend a film that's been out a few weeks. It should still be playing in most major markets. It's called The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Oh, I heard that's supposed to be great.
Yeah,
this is a marvelous film. I went to see it.
Cool.
It's basically the senior BAFTA All-Stars. You've got Tom Wilkinson and Dame Judi Dench, Dame Maggie Smith, Bill Nye. You've got all these very familiar British character actors. They play a disparate group of British retirees who are all financially pinched for one reason or another, not sure what to do with their golden years, and they wind up all following the same ad for a retirement home in India. It's run by Dev Patel, who was the young man in Slumdog Millionaire,
mm-hmm.
and he's now on this new HBO series, The Newsroom, which is starting Sunday, the Aaron Sorkin series.
Right.
And let's just say that the hotel isn't quite what he advertised when they get there. And they all discover things about themselves as they're adapting to this new land. It makes, in this film, India looks absolutely stunning. They're drawn into the lifestyle there, into the culture. It's certainly worth seeing. It really is.
It sounds amazing. It
now,
does.
In terms
I've heard
of the movies
about
coming
it.
Out,
I actually heard about it. Mm-hmm.
It's very good. It is not a wide release, so you'll have to you might want to check the web and look to see where it's playing near you. Now, talking about wide releases, the movie that's going very wide this weekend that I can also recommend is Brave. This is the latest movie from Pixar, and it's the first time that there's been a female protagonist in a Pixar movie. This one's set in Scotland many, many years ago, and it's sort of a mix of realism and magic. Merida is you've probably seen her in the posters. She is the young Scottish princess who has the cascading, unruly red hair, cascading down her head in ringlets. She is a skilled archer, and she wants no part of marrying one of the other someone from one of the other clans to make alliances. She wants to go off on her own and have adventures, and she certainly does in very unexpected ways. As I said, I have a 9-year-old daughter. She has been looking forward to this movie ever since she first saw the first poster for it. She went and she was just enthralled. And I mean, I was as well. Pixar doesn't make bad movies, and this was just terrific. A lot of Scottish actors providing the voices. Kelly MacDonald, who was in No Country for Old Men, who was on Boardwalk Empire. Craig Ferguson, of course, who has his late night show. Billy Connolly, the legendary comedian Kevin McKidd, a lot of Scottish performers, and then playing the very important part of Merida's mother, because this really, at heart, is a story about a mother and daughter and their relationship, is the wonderful Emma Thompson, who is British, not Scottish, but there's no way that you could tell from this performance. She's just dead bang perfect. So we saw a screening of that, and both my daughter and my wife and I can certainly recommend Brave. It's just a wonderful film.
Great. David, I have to ask you, because I saw this today on television. There's a movie, I'm not sure if it's out yet, it's called Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Killer.
Vampire Hunter, yes. This movie
That's
is
it.
Also opening tomorrow. It's opening this weekend. This is, do you remember
like,
a couple
what?
Of years ago? Yes, this is the actual title of the movie, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
Now, I got to go back a couple of years. Do you remember when the book that everyone was talking about was Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
Yes.
Where they took Pride and Prejudice and they basically rewrote it, keeping the characters, keeping the themes of the movie, and working in this very sort of modern genre of zombies. It was a huge hit, and it spawned some other imitators, including a book called Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. The man who wrote the novel has adapted it for the screen. Tim Burton actually produced it, and although he didn't direct. And it reimagines Lincoln as not only, you know, a rail splitter and a lawyer who goes on to be president, but a vampire hunter. A vampire killed his mother, and that's been his driving force, and it turns out that the South is trying to, you know, create its own nation, not only for self-determination and for slavery and for whatever else, but because they're vampires, or at least a lot of them are vampires. It's a very creative reimagining of that period. And, you know, his special tool to kill them is his trademark wood-chopping axe with the blade dipped in a special substance that can get the vampires. I mean, really, you know, you want a movie that's summed up in the title, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. That pretty much does it right there. And there's one other movie that's also opening this weekend, and this one might be the most intriguing of all. It's called Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Now, Steve Carell has a couple of modes. He can be wild and crazy and wacky guy, very oddball and funny, like he was in 40-Year-Old Virgin. I tend to like him in films where he is more introverted. He did a wonderful film a few years ago set in Rhode Island called Dan in Real Life that was about him as a single dad to three daughters at a big family reunion. It was just touching and wonderful. He's in that mode here. The title, again, says it all. It's the end of the world. An asteroid is coming. There's going to be no chance to save us from it. Bruce Willis is not getting in the spaceship this time and going out to knock it off course. The end is nigh. And so society is falling apart. And what do you do in those last few weeks? He hooks up, as friends, at least at first, with this younger neighbor of his, played by Keira Knightley. She is hoping to somehow get to England to see her family, or at least talk to them again. And she encourages him to use this time he's got left to reach out and find his first love, you know, the first girl that captured his heart and got away. And so they go on a road trip in this disintegrating society, and they find an unexpected bond between them. And, you know, it asks some very good questions. If you knew your time was limited, what would you do? How would you spend that time? Who would you spend it with? And it's a pretty ambitious idea for, you know, a romantic comedy, you know, a romantic comedy about the end of the world. Basically.
Yeah.
David, I hate to interrupt, but our time is up. You're fabulous. You are.
I don't want him to go
fabulous.
Away.
Yeah. You have to come
Yeah, we love
again.
You, David.
You
well, you're just going to have to ask me back, and I keep dangling the prospect of my famous Hollywood Walk of Fame story. One of these days I'm going
to
get to it.
You're going to tell that first so we get it. So you can do it next time. How's that sound?
There you go. All right. Tell me when you want me back, and I'm there.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Goodbye. Thank you for joining us.
It'll be soon.
Thank you,
Everybody,
ladies. I appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Chit Chat Cafe. Tonight we'd like to thank our great guests, Angela Cartwright and Charlotte Reed and David Daniel, as always. It's been a pleasure. Girls, my ladies.
Dave, oh, Betty, we love Ann. It. You know we love you.
I love you, girls.
Love you, too. And we'll be back next week.
We will. Good night, yes. Everybody.
Good night, everybody.